than by a DA and somebody else who lived nearby? No, not as far as I know.
Yeah, a DA and a retired
right, and there, there we have less medical marijuana distribution, much less than we had when it was illegal and it was simply tolerated by the police department.
I still want to move on to some of these other issues that I have here, Robert, and I know our time is fleeting.
By the way, if Mike wants to give us any comments in writing, we would be happy to consider them and pass them on to the audience. We really carefully consider all your comments. And frankly, this is said in all seriousness, I will read verbatim any responses that you've been unable to make on the because of the format of this debate to the audience at a future show.
An admittedly silly format.
Go ahead.
Okay, about the police department, you know, you supported paying $13 million for a new police station when it was originally bid to cost $7 million. You oversaw all of those cost overruns and stamped it. You voted for a curfew on the levee so that people can't go on the levee at night for, I thought, fallacious reasons. You voted for the shoulder tap law, making a crime out of something that isn't even a crime anywhere else in the country, as far as I know. You voted for the youth curfew to criminalize youth should they be out after 11. You voted to make blowing bubbles illegal. I mean, the menace of bubble blowing. Okay,
it was ratified again, I believe, in 2003 in January when you were on the council. That section was repeated. And as part of the move-along law, if I'm not mistaken. I can take a look at it.
Okay,
again,
there's probably a legitimate dispute about the bubble blowing. You voted to make it illegal to politically table for more than an hour in one place.
No, Mr. Rockin is correct. He did not vote for that.
Okay, and that this not only when people asked repeatedly what the fines would be for not moving along, neither you nor Mayor Riley would allow that to take place in any of the discussion before the vote. I personally came up after the vote had happened and demanded to know why you wouldn't allow what the fines would be. And you said, what idiot, once having been warned by a police officer, wouldn't move along once told to move along? What an idiot, like maybe Rosa Parks was an idiot who wouldn't move along when told to move?
And we actually, of course, have a case that came up in court 2 days ago. Steve Argue here in the studio did not move along at a political table, and he was dragged up by the police. I guess they had they pulled out a lieutenant. They had I'm not sure how many squad cars. How many police officers were involved in that?
Well, there were at least five police officers. What's happened so far is we got another continuance because things had not been filed, and certain questions have come up in terms of things getting filed on time. So anybody out there who especially wants to file in terms of constitutional law and defense of the First Amendment, you can give me a call at 454-0272. And so far, yeah, so what's come up is the next court date is going to be December 14th. And the city council has, and the city government has every opportunity to drop charges and to repeal their move-along law that political tabling should not be limited to 1 hour, that free speech and the First Amendment to the Constitution is not something that should be moved along or limited to 1 hour.
And we can ask finally, is that something? I know that you had an emergency law to make sure that jugglers were protected. Do you think that individuals at political tables will get the same assistance from you before Christmas, Mike?
If I knew the answer to that, I would be happy to share it with you. But no, I have no plans to bring that up
not an emergency as far as you're concerned.
No.
Unlike the juggling emergency.
Apparently. Because the reason I have to say that the juggling thing became an emergency, so to speak, was because the law was being interpreted in ways that no one had intended it to be interpreted, and we disagree about whether the law makes sense or is right about the other move-along law and the other kinds of issues, but we had never intended that juggling be banned, and so basically we tried to
intend that political tables be banned for over an hour?
Our intent was that if people are causing problems on the street in front of one particular location, that it's reasonable after an hour for them to move to the next block and continue their activities there. That was our intent, and that's what I think is going on. The idea that somehow that juggling was being banned when we said that people, you know, shouldn't be allowed to, like, hold sports events on the street was a misinterpretation of what the council wanted, so we wanted to clarify our intent there. I have to go. Thank you very much for inviting me on. Thank the panel for their questions.
We thank Mike for his patience here. We're going to give you a complimentary copy of the downtown ordinance, of which you are, in fact, the author of so many, or at least a supporter of so many of these. Hey, thanks, Mike.
We appreciate roasting our city council
members. That was council member Mike Rotkin getting a special tribute from Becky Johnson. Now is your opportunity to call in and lambaste the panel for its shabby treatment of three-time mayor and potential mayor, Mike Rotkin, although Scott Kennedy is due to be mayor next, so perhaps we should focus our thoughts on him.
Maybe we can invite him to Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides again, you know? Maybe the seventh time will be the charm.
Yeah, we have to say that even though Mike Rotkin has generally appeared regularly on these programs, usually not in this format. Usually it's more of a formal debate format, where everyone gets equal time. In this format, as you can see, Mike was at the mercy of the panel, and I frankly think that it was helpful in bringing out some issues, but obviously rather frustrating for Mike. Mike, of course, has plenty of time at City Council, and he'll be able to respond to any of these concerns in writing, and as I said, I will be happy to read them. Steve?
I need to get going. I'm working on my congressional campaign against Congressman Samfar, and I need to get more signatures to get on the ballot. So I need to get going on that, and anybody who wants to help me out with that can call me, 454-0272. You have to be registered with the Peace and Freedom Party for your signature to count, and I think Mike Rotkin, as usual, is continuing to defend policies which are completely unfair towards the poor, and do not help people get housing, adequate housing, at low cost in this town, and pretending to do this all with under the guise of doing what's realistic, and actually, you know, the what he brought up, this was, I think, in '98. I heard him say this that the police used to beat up homeless people and dump them outside of town. Now, because of what he's done with the sleeping ban and so forth, the police having a legal way to stop people from doing these things, from sleeping places, it stopped a lot of this illegal abuse. That whole idea, I think, this is his kind of claim, that within the system, these are the things that are viable, these are the kinds of things that can be done, and this is not viable, this is not something that's a solution for the people, and Mike Rotkin has come up with a few solutions and a lot more problems for the people.
Becky, what's your assessment of all this? Yeah, I know you had a number of questions you weren't able to answer.
We just barely scratched the surface here. I mean, Mike Rotkin allowed the city to wall off the Costa Brava planner for between $7,000 and $12,000 in a severe budget crisis. It was paid for out of the police budget. And with no public hearings, no item in either the Downtown Commission or the Parks and Rec Commission, which is responsible for the benches in park areas on Pacific Avenue. Now, he didn't vote for that. He basically voted for it by his silence, where silence equals compliance. He voted for the $1.7 million per year increase in the police budget for retirement salaries. And he complained at the time that he had to do it, but I'm sorry, there was no gun pointed at his head making him vote that way. He didn't have to vote for that. And that one vote has dramatically impacted the budget in the city of Santa Cruz. He voted to disband the CPRB at a time when they had passed a resolution asking the council to affirm or to reaffirm that the Santa Cruz police are not to enforce the laws selectively or to harass people. That resolution was passed by the CPRB. It never made it to light of day at the council because the council voted to disband the CPRB. Mike Rotkin has been in office where we've had these proliferating ordinances, which of course mean more job security for the police. The National Coalition on Homelessness estimates that each infraction ticket written costs the city an estimated $1,000 in enforcement considering police staff time to issue the citation, to write reports, to appear in court later on, prosecutors' time, judges' time, bailiffs' time, court reporters' time, security guards, jail costs, personnel, transportation costs between the jail and the court. This is just standard fare that Mike has for and has been delivering more of the same for years. Mike Rockin pushed to sell the popular homeless garden project on Pelton Street over severe neighborhood objections. This is the exact opposite of NIMBY, the not in my backyard syndrome. The people who were closest to the Pelton Street site were lobbying heavily to keep that in. And they sold it to but Mike Rodkin and Scott Kennedy together commandeered this sale and to a private developer who built 7 luxury homes. And that's just what Santa Cruz needs, more luxury homes. Mike Rodkin has ignored multiple requests to provide a second bus to the armory or the churches so that working people can use that program. The pickup, having to sign up at 3:00 in the afternoon to get up to the armory, just doesn't work for most working people who can't even get off their job until after 5. Mike Rockin voted to remodel the homeless services center and build the family shelter, and I commend him for that. But he's adamant against a low cost campground or car park, which is exactly what homeless people need. I mean, all of this talk that we see in the Sentinel about West Side neighbors are up in arms because homeless people are in their campers out there in their neighborhoods, just again demonstrates that we need a place for homeless people where they can legally go. And Mike is just, he considers that poison. Let's see, what else? Mike Rockin, along with Councilmember Scott Kennedy, single-handedly closed the Coral Street open-air shelter back in 1995, was that December 95, which had been home to up to 225 people. And at that time, because there had been some inclement weather, there were 35 well-equipped homeless people who were there, who were immediately banished, and no new service was open. Those people were banished to the bushes and under the bridges and wherever. They went to New Brighton Beach for 2 weeks. And gee, thanks. Happy Merry Christmas. Here's 2 weeks at New Brighton and then dropped forever. I wanted to ask Mike about the conditions at the shelter, which the homeless people have likened to be like being in jail, where they're barked at by staff, they're herded into lines at inconvenient times, they have to go to a facility which is behind barbed wire, they're not allowed to park their car at the armory or at the churches, and where people are 86th for trivial things, and then denied shelter in the program at all. They're awakened at 5:30 a.m. to go and stand in the cold. I wanted to ask Mike if this is an example of tough love, where shelters are designed to make people not want to use them and to kind of hide the fact that there's such a critical need for shelter in our community. Now, the River Street shelter is much better, but it has a waiting list, and people are dumped out of it after 30 days. Let's see. I'm just wondering, you know, I mean, this sleeping ban outlaws the act of sleeping. And I wanted to ask Mike, what is the intent of this law? Does he really think that homeless people shouldn't sleep at night? Does he really think that homeless people should stay awake and wander around all night until 8:30 in the morning when they can curl up somewhere and sleep without getting a ticket? I mean, what is the point? The blanket ban, which makes it illegal to cover up with a blanket between 11 p.m. and 8:30 a.m. Does Mike not want people staying warm? Isn't he concerned about hypothermia? I mean, we have a shelter shortage. And as a city, since we're not providing anywhere near the amount of shelter that is really needed for considering the number of people that are homeless, we must allow people to shelter themselves. anything else is just inhumane. It treats homeless people like they're not worthy of being helped and encourages other members of society who delight in picking on the weak to harass the homelessness. And we have a problem with troll busting. And I think that it's aided and abetted by leaders in our community who make a lot of disparaging comments about homeless people. Other problems homeless people have in the community, which I don't think Mike has addressed, is the lack of nutrition at some of the homeless service center meals. There have been complaints about people being fed bad food, too much sugar and starch, not enough vegetables, not enough nutritious whole food that can help people who are living out of doors and under a lot of stress, and they really need that good nutrition. No bus for working people. People with ID can't get into the armory. Lack of a campground places too much environmental damage is being done by illegal, unregulated campers. It seems that the environmentalists should get behind setting up a campground locally somewhere, just to relieve some of the pressure on some of the areas in our green belt that are being impacted by campers who really have no place else to go. We have a lack of substance abuse treatment for homeless people, maybe two places in the Janus program at any given time, and yet there's a much significant, still a minority, but a significant percentage of homeless people who are suffering from some sort of substance abuse, whether it's alcohol or drugs, and for them realistically to get their lives together, they need to get into some substance abuse programs, which are largely non-existent. I could go on, but I've been going on and on. What do you have?
Actually, what I propose is anybody, you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, and this has been Bathrop Spears Broadsides. We still will be for the next hour and a half. We've had, of course, Mike Rotkin being grilled, so to speak, or should we say talked about by our panel, Mike Rotkin's the man being under discussion, Becky and Becky Johnson, you just heard, and Steve Argue, and I've been throwing in my two cents. I'm Robert Norris. But now is your opportunity to throw in any comments you may want to make to the, not to Mike, because he may be listening, he may not be, but he's not in the studio. But if you have questions for Becky, if you have some comments you want to make about anything you've heard, feel free to call in at 427-3772, and you can. I don't know, Becky. These, of course, what you're talking about are issues that have been raised over the years here.
Well, the De Anza one is very recent. You know, here we're with Mike Robb. Can push to settle with manufactured homes communities of Chicago, this rapacious corporation that was out to gut rent control locally and really steal the equity of these seniors' homes, as well as eliminate affordable housing in those areas forever. And he supported this alarming misinformation that it would likely cost $16 million to continue fighting these lawsuits, where realistically, even if the city were to lose, it would be more like $1.5 million in damages that would be awarded. And it is true that MHC was running up some very hefty legal fees, but there's an arbitration board. If people are charging too much for their legal fees, the city has the option to go to an arbitration board and have those legal fees reduced to something that's more in line with the actual cost. He didn't address the idea of having an assessment district set up that the residents were very eager to have going, that would help to provide funding to fight this lawsuit. He kept everything behind closed doors, forced the tenants to sign or else. And this, because of Mike's leadership, he has effectively destroyed in time 260 units of affordable housing. Not today, not tomorrow, but over the course of the coming years, those units will no longer be affordable to anyone.
And perhaps to spice things up, I should give you what I think Mike's responses might be. It sounds like when we're criticizing Rodkin that we are, you know, getting personal, or it may begin to sound a bit kind of unduly harsh. Unfortunately, that what's really harsh are the policies that Mike's essentially stood for and supported, and the kind of mystification that's happened around these issues, where, as I said before, one of the questions that I didn't ask him that I would have liked to ask, and perhaps I will ask him at some future time, is, you're an how would you advise an activist to go about assuring the same kinds of protections in Santa Cruz that, let's say, homeless people have in Miami, Florida, where they're subject now to the Pottinger guidelines? Do we have to file the same kind of lawsuit that the ACLU did because you're so you believe it's not politically possible to pass any of this stuff at the city council level without a lawsuit to make it let homeless people sleep legally somewhere at night? Here's a caller. Let's see what the caller says. Is this Mike Rodkin calling in?
This is part of the choir. This is Bob Patton.
Uh-oh.
It's probably mostly who's listening right now, but I did want to just comment on his... Well, actually, I wanted to make an observation. His doublespeak is one of the best I've ever listened to in my life, and I just have to give him credit for being able to hang in there and weigh in on the issues with a lot of doublespeak that sounds like facts.
Well, what kind of doublespeak are you talking about, Bob?
All the way he talks about being within the system and having to stay and to get anything done. He has to stand inside the tent and piss out instead of standing outside the tent and piss in, where most of us are at. I mean, in the United States, and what we're talking about is the political scene here, the working class organization is very, very weak. And so when you talk about homeless and street people's ability to make anything flow is absolutely, at a very low point when it comes to having any power. And him being inside the system and defending it like that is absolutely his way of endorsing. He's not just compromised by being inside the system. He's endorsing the electoral system that we have definitely is flawed, along with that weak organizing ability that the people on the lower part of the rungs have, including most activists. And so he's part of that structure, that state structure that is actually does policies that are meant to keep us from being able to have any effect. And he, with his doublespeak, sits there and justifies that like as if he's doing something from inside for us.
It's interesting, Bob, you should say that. There's the one thing we didn't get into here, although we kind of referred to it tangentially, was city council policies and how he has impacted how city council is run. Mike is the council member who wanted to have me arrested for using his name in city council at oral communications. This was some years ago, but that was something he actually tried to do for a number of times. He's the individual who took people to trial for protests to shut down city hall. He wanted to shut down city hall at night to all protests because of an ongoing protest against this rather abusive law, which we all know about, the sleeping ban. That where homeless people had no place to sleep, and yet his police force, he was mayor, were arresting and ticketing people for sleeping. And again, this was the summer Marini did his thing we mentioned to Father Marie at Holy Cross, where there was a controversy about who closed it and what impact he had. But the city council processes are something I think he's not, he's also really been quite instrumental in, shutting down debates, moving items, he and Kennedy both, to the end of agendas, making sure things don't get talked about by using parliamentary rules, cutting debate short, cutting public comment short, making sure the public comment doesn't happen on some items, things of that sort.
Yeah, I mean, I can see exactly what you're talking about when talk about the city council being so unwilling to go along with or work with the people. And when you have that kind of politician or politicians, members of the city council, whatever you want to call it, working within the system against the people and then patting themselves on the back for their own political gains and keeping the poor people down and those that are disenfranchised more disenfranchised is just part of the political way it is.
Well, I think it's also kind of a paternalism. I think he feels that, you know, the city council makes it's best to make these decisions kind of in, you know, behind closed doors and then bring them out, and essentially it's like what the staff does. The staff makes proposals that are pretty much rubber stamped by the council. The council makes decisions like the DeAnza decision behind closed doors, then comes out and 6-1s us, you know, with it. And that's what they do. And they do this, they did this with the downtown ordinances. I guess they 5-2'd us until that the votes on the city council, 5 yes, 2 no. When Sugar and Crone left the council, it became 7-0. And you got these laws that criminalized political tablers. Rotkin wouldn't acknowledge that. I mean, you know, he's a charming guy. He's very friendly. He's very amiable. It's difficult to be in the same room with him and not even like him as a person. But of course, that's really what a politician does.
Yeah, and
you know, politician
and
charms.
And we're talking, you know, political interpretations here, and they're inexhaustible, and they go on forever. But you know, one of the things about the type of politics that are happening here is the poor people and those of us who are being affected by those laws. I mean, the stakes are of this contest are pretty large. I mean, those that are being pushed around by the mean laws, to get those laws reversed might mean survival.
Well, that's really the question, and I think that's why maybe it's time to stop talking about Mike Rotkin, because we know his positions. I mean, we know where he stands. I mean,
oh,
it's
yeah.
kind of, you know, I'm not even, you know, the reason he was originally invited on the show had to do with, I guess, I met him at a public safety committee meeting, and the DeAnza controversy was heavy, and I thought that would be an opportunity for DeAnza people to call in and confront him. Well, he canceled that weekend. I don't think it was intentionally having to do with the DeAnza issue. He had a personal issue, but it kind of made it, you know, and then the DeAnza people caved to what I feel is really bad board of directors decisions on that, not to file the referendum signatures. So it wasn't really an active opportunity for the community to talk to him in the way that I'd hoped. It is an active opportunity, however, for us to consider what steps to take next. Becky had a whole bunch of questions to ask Mike, and you know they've been asked over the years. And actually, I'm glad hearing Becky present all this stuff, and I'm glad hearing you know, with your thoughts. But I wonder, I know you've been working with the Human Rights Organization. How's that coming along?
Well, like it's beginning to happen. We went up to the university and passed out quite a few flyers on you know, building for the organization, so we're still working on that.
This is a group fighting the sleeping ban and the downtown ordinances, both of which Mike Rotkin has championed, of course.
Yes, I wasn't quite ready to talk about that yet, but
right. Sorry, yeah.
I did want to make one more comment about
sure.
his, you know, the reason he does stay so in line with the steps, the marching steps of American politics, is that if he does have a more liberal reading of the law, more liberal actions for the poor, then he's going to undermine the power of the employers around here, of the business people, and of the people that, you know, support him. So whether he calls himself a liberal or a progressive or anything else, his actions show that that's exactly what he's doing.
Yeah, I think he supports the real estate interests and the merchant interests, to the exclusion of great swaths of members of our community who are objecting or impacted.
It'd be nice to have him answer some questions on that issue in writing. And again, if people who've been listening in feel that Rotkin is not, he didn't have an opportunity to answer fully questions. That was certainly true. He would have preferred to have more time. But I feel that both that and both the questions that were not asked that should have been asked, if you want to send in questions to me, Robert Norse, at 309 Cedar, PMB 14B, Santa Cruz, California, and I could give you that address more thoroughly if you call the Huff line at 423-HUFF if you haven't got a pencil, 423-HUFF, and I'll give you the address. I'll call you back with the address. Be happy to give it to you, and then you can present those questions. I can present those questions to him. Actually, you can call Rotkin himself at 420-5020. That's his city council line. Then you have to wait and get the exact line. You push a number and you get his specific line. You can leave him a question, and if you do leave him questions, I'd appreciate it if you would let us know what answers he gives so that we can pass them on to the community.
I think Mike is one of the council members who's more likely to return a phone call or to answer a question. He's more accessible than a lot of the council members.
Yeah,
and he did support free radio, so, I mean, I don't think that we should completely bash everything he's done, because he has done some good things over the years.
Kennedy, I think, carried the free radio thing, frankly, though I don't like 90% of what Kennedy does. And supporting free radio in this case means, you know, a resolution supporting free radio sort of in principle, but not in terms of anything substantial, whether through any kind of aid or any kind of direction to the city police not to enforce FCC bullshit. I mean, one also has to look at the limits. Bob, did you want to say something else before?
Well, I want to get off the line, so
yeah.
I let other callers call in. But I did want to say that the Human Rights Organization is still looking for members, and we are working particularly around the five most egregious municipal codes: the sleeping ban, the camping ban, the blanket ban, the begging ban, and the setting ban. And when I was up at the activist organization that was happening up at campus, which Mike Rotkin was part of, and I did go to one of his presentations or panels, and
it's
much more radical and in-your-face kind of politics coming out of the university there than Mike Rotkin could possibly represent. I felt good about the contact I had made with the students up there, and I feel that they could become a very integrated part of human rights actions and, you know, other movements to try to liberalize these laws.
How can people be a part of the human rights organization?
Let me give that telephone number, and that is 425-4467, and call for directions to our next meeting.
425-4467?
That's correct.
Okay, well, thank you, Bob, and
well, keep up the good work. I think the struggle needs to go on, and the issues need to be debated. So, thanks again.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye bye.
Robert.
Yeah.
I did want, you know, Mike did make a comment here that's kind of a new one about the affordable housing.
I was going to ask you, do we have anything new from Rotkin? Do you want to take this call first before we do that, or not?
Well, just make say he said
Hang
that
on,
there's
caller.
A higher that Santa Cruz has a higher percentage of affordable housing than any other city in the state of California, and that we have 11% of our housing is affordable housing.
Okay.
Where is it?
Maybe we can do some research on that maybe before the next show. Hi there, you're on Free Radio with Robert Becky and a special mystery guest in the studio I'll introduce in a moment. Go ahead.
Hi. You know, someone said something to me a long time ago that I've never been able to get out of my head,
mm-hmm.
but I've never had the answer to either.
Uh-huh.
They said, when I was talking about these people, that if you talk to Mike Rotkin and Kennedy, they will say that it is a thankless job, that it is a hard job, they don't get paid enough, all the extra hours they put in. And since they're not particularly altruistic people, someone made the comment that the perks must be tremendous to try and get reelected. When their 2 years are up, man, before they're even up, they're starting to campaign again. So this is my question, and it's kind of to the public, because I don't even know if any of the panel would know the answer. What do you perceive are the perks? The person who said this to me indicated that they were, you know, favoritism in many things, actually money, things like luxuries, and I've never been able to forget that, never been able to prove it. I was wondering if anybody could shed any light on that.
Mm-hmm. You want me to answer that on air, Roxanne?
Anybody who can answer it, because I really don't know the answer.
I'm kind of vague about it, too. I mean, they're obviously being in a position of power gives you a kind of, it can have its own psychological perk. You know, some people, a lot of us feel powerless a lot of the time.
Well, Mike's a tremendous egotist, so on his part, I could see that. I see his ego as completely, he left your studio today thinking he did great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he always thinks he does great. So, but I'm talking about the people like Cynthia Matthews, all of them that strive to be reelected over and over and over to such a thankless job,
mm-hmm.
to say, you know, and I can only guess. I was just wondering if anybody who's out there knows specifically what kinds of perks.
Well, you get recognition, you get invited to events, you get national, potentially national news coverage. You you get referred to as mayor so-and-so because everybody who is elected to council at one time or another, except for Michael Hernandez, becomes mayor. Any thoughts on that, Becky, as to what the perks are of being a city council member?
I don't have any clear evidence of them taking bribes or payoffs, but it's been suggested at other times in the past that what they were doing made no sense. Like, say, selling off the Pelton Street property out from underneath the Homeless Garden Project. The city didn't make that much money on that deal, and it was over huge public outcry against that.
I remember that.
And there were people saying, why did the city do this? What was in it for the city to do this? And so there was a suggestion that there were some other benefits that we were not privy to, that some other rationale that the council members were going on for that vote. I worried about with MHC here, with the De Anza people here, where MHC, which bought a property for, what was it, $8.4 million, and now they claim that it's really worth $80 million. That's a lot of profit in there that they felt that they were being denied access to. And yet here's the city council that's complying. Oh, okay, we'll let you maximize your profit. To what end? What does the city get out of it? It's not clear that the city got any benefit at all.
Well, and it goes
that.
Against what they proclaim, because they proclaim to be, like, neighbor-friendly, like this being one of the reasons that, for instance, the cannabis club couldn't go in a block from the school or in a neighborhood. They claim to be neighborhood-friendly, but with Pelton, the neighbors actually wanted the garden to stay. They'll put bumps in your neighborhood because they're neighborhood friendly. They'll put street bumps everywhere. But you're right. They sold that property when the neighbors did not want it sold. So, but, you know, I was hoping that listeners out there, actually, because I know everyone suspects, they just don't know, that somebody might be able to shed some light on what being best friends with George Al means, what does it mean?
Another example is the Del Mar Theater, where the city voted to spend a huge amount of redevelopment money to giving it to the two richest men in town, you know. a huge benefit in to the owners of the Del Mar Theater, which is, Barry Swinson and George Al. Or is it Ron Lau? I'm not sure.
So I'm going to get off the phone because I'm hoping someone else can call in that maybe can shed some light on it. I mean, people do have secretaries.
We wish we'd had you in the studio, Roxanne.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks. Bye.
All righty. Yeah, Roxanne is, got a sharp set of claws that might have given the Rotkin pause. Claws that give pause. Anyway, 427-3772, here's a caller. Hi, caller. You're on free radio.
Hi, Robert and Becky.
Hey, Theodora.
Yeah, and I'm just following up on Roxanne's call because I'm just wondering, has anybody ever done a Freedom of Information Act on Rotkin and Kennedy and Matthews and these folks to even see what, you know, what their history is?
What would that be? How would one?
I've never filed for a Freedom of Information Act, but it's essentially you're filing for, you know. Seeing what government information is.
I filed Public Records Act requests. And that's the kind of the state equivalent of the Freedom of Information Act, which is a federal law. We have a man in the studio who apparently has done some of that, if I'm not mistaken. His name is the infamous Yon Golder. Yon, you actually were mentioned in today's Sentinel. You came into the campers story, but that's another story entirely. Yon, go ahead. Theodora's got a question for you.
Yeah, Theodora, the California Public Records Act, which is the California equivalent of the federal Freedom of Information Act, does not apply to trying to get information about private things that are going on. But trying to find out, for example, the perks of a city council person, to give you a perspective on how difficult it is, I have been trying for more than a year to get information from the city through Public Records Act requests, perfectly lawful requests that are supposed to be answered within 10 days. The city has done everything in the world to stop me, including trying to get an injunction against me, and they weren't successful in that. And then when we made a stipulation in court that they would answer the questions, five questions a month, they didn't obey that and still haven't obeyed it. So I have to take them back to court, essentially, for an order to show cause and a possible contempt to court. But they just don't, they're just arrogant. They just don't do it. If they don't want you to know, they're not going to let you to know. And then when you talk about the private perks of a city council person, that's even more private. That's not really government records. Government records are something that's normally kept during the course of government business, and there are some things that are not disclosable involving investigations and confidential information. Most of the rest is disclosable. The Act, if you're interested in the Act and you want to know more about it, it's Government Code 6250, state statutes, and it tells you exactly what you can get and what you can't get. One of the most valuable things I've been able to get is requests for public assistance. Anytime a 911 call is made or there's essentially a public phone call for request for information or for public assistance, you can get the transcript of that showing exactly who called and what was said over the radio and how it was responded to, and that can answer a lot of questions in cases where there's crime or violence or something going on, emergency. But as far as the perks are concerned, I think mostly it's done for strokes myself. I think the strokes and the kind of social benefits that come from having your way greased around and getting invited to things, and in that sense that whether it's real or not, that you're doing something for the community. That's why people come back again and again to the council table.
Well, I certainly think that would explain a lot. I often make the analogy that the mafia and the, you know, Cosa Nostra is kind of the model for politics in America, and people think, oh, you know, we're more civilized than that, but it really is who you know and how long you've known them, and that explains a lot. But I've talked with folks who've spoken about the early involvement of CIA folks with the founding of UCSC, and we really underestimate the kind of planning that goes long-term planning.
The founding of what? I'm sorry.
UCSC.
UCSC.
Yeah, UCSC was founded, in the mid-60s, the CIA still, was still considered a legitimate government organization, and there's a lot of people who we consider progressive leaders that emerged at that time that are tainted with CIA money, mm-hmm. whether it was innocently so or whether they were aware of their, the bigger job they were doing. I can't attest for that, but I think we underestimate, again, how movements and communities are purposefully taken over and leaders put in place that have... are part of a longer term goal. Rulership is not accidental. We think we're playing a big part when we go to go and vote, but a lot of pieces have been set in place by people who are hell bent on controlling the movements of communities and how we develop. I don't have I can't name names or give dates and whatnot, but I just say that it's not accidental.
Now that I have you on the line, because in our last show, you brought up we had the issue of the Light Up with Arnie thing that's happening tomorrow. You remember that?
Yeah.
And you expressed some concerns about that. Actually, serious concerns that were leading you to boycott the event.
Mm-hmm.
And since that time, I've contacted organizer of the event, Frank, who I invited to be on the air. I invited him to call in to give his perspective on it. I got a message from him. He gave me kind of a long description of his responses to some of the concerns. And I also spoke with Andrea Tischler about this and her perspective. She's the woman, for those who don't know, there's an event tomorrow at 1135 North Branson Ford A, which is called a Light Up with Arnie event, or Grope Along with Arnie. It has to do with the rationale for the event is kind of a satirical Lefties for Arnie event that tries to encourage or pressure Arnold Schwarzenegger, the new governor, to decriminalize marijuana and assist medical marijuana protections against the feds and so forth. I certainly favor that objective, and I like pranksterism, and I think Frank is something of a prankster in his own way. He's proposed different kind of outrageous activities in the past, including the Mammary Manifesto a year and a half ago and so forth, opposing the downtown ordinances. But you expressed some serious concerns that there was some real problems, and I think Andrea Tischler also, though our proposition is not as strong as yours, I don't think she's urging a boycott of the event, but she did express some she indicated she withdrew from the event, no question about that. And for those who are interested, I'm still saying the event is happening tomorrow at 4:20. It costs $10. It's at 1135 North Branson Forte. I really wanted Frank to put forward his own thoughts. I don't want to be an advocate for him in this matter. I was recruited for the event as a judge, and I'm still kind of weighing my options here. I'm still not sure what I'm going to be doing in that situation. But I'm you know, I think he may be listening in. I want to encourage him to call in to give his response to the concerns that are raised, which include the fact to go into on the air, and maybe we should just leave it at that. And we're talking about other issues, but in case people want to carry on with that issue, that discussion, it can be discussed further, and the invitation has been put out to Frank, and I thank you for raising that issue and also for calling in on this issue. And if anybody has more information about how to address Public Records Act, how to make the city council more accountable, how to make the public officials more accountable, what perks are they getting, I guess we can call in and talk more about that. Is there more you want to say yourself?
No,
Deborah?
Just raise that issue, that the possibility that some people are representing interests that they're not public about, and long-term interests that they're not public about, and, you know, I'm just a suspicious kind of gal.
You're just a suspicious woman.
I am.
Just make sure you don't. Have you been smoking too much of that funny stuff?
No, not enough of that funny stuff. I got a mind that works, what can I say?
You're here.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Okay, thanks for the show.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Phone lines are open, 427-3772. In the studio with me, the notorious Yon Golder. Yon has been keeping an eye on things, but apparently someone's keeping an ear on us. Here's the here's another one. Incoming phone call. Hi, you're on free radio.
Yeah, hi. Several things really fast. I'm really pleased to hear you speaking. I just inadvertently found you on the radio dial. I'm pleased. I've listened for about a half hour, and I wanted to say that I have heard Kennedy say point blank to me that the whole reason that he's involved in running again, this was before he ran, was totally a power issue.
Huh. What kind of power do you think he was referring to?
Power to make the decisions.
Mm-hmm.
Power, whatever. I mean, he said he was very interested in the power of it, and that was why he was going to run. I've found myself in a couple of social situations with him where I think other people have been appreciative of the fact of his association with the Center for Nonviolence and his religious associations and things, but haven't seen him in his workings in the city council and his connections with the people, the conservative business people in the community, and don't know that side of him.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been very, very disappointed at both Rotkin and Kennedy and the whole entire city council at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
The camping ban is something that I'm very disappointed to see was dropped. I was on one of the task force at one point that looked into that and talked about it in the community.
Homeless Issues Task Force?
Yeah. And where they were looking into the camping ban specifically.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And
they recommended that it be overturned.
Well, I'm really disappointed that the people in the community are so frightened and are led around by the nose by conservatives who just all they have to do is say something about the homeless people being any way that I believe. I remember Christopher Crone saying, "If the people lead, the leaders will follow."
Yeah.
And I don't.
Just a second.
I just want to say that if the homeless people were given a face, if they were brought out in the community and that they were the ones who people met and they got to know, that there would be far more chance of things like the camping ban being lifted. As long as people can make the homeless people a group that they don't have to think about and meet and know and acknowledge as human, good people with rights like everybody else, I think that they're always going to be trashed.
I agree with you, and I think, but if you, I'd love to invite you and others listening to come to a HUF meeting. That's Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, where we actually find the occasional homeless person showing up. They usually were housed folks concerned about civil rights issues. We meet every Wednesday, 8:30 in the morning at Baker's Square at 1107 Ocean, in case you decide you want to wander on in.
Okay.
Thanks for calling. Any other thoughts?
No, that's all.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thanks. Bye.
And phone lines are open, 427-3772. Yon, you were saying? What were you saying?
Well, I think it's great to speculate in general about kind of conspiracies and theories of what drives the people in power. But I just think that it's more useful to pick an issue that you really feel strongly about and really go after them and really ask the hard questions, learn enough, do enough homework, find out what's really going on. And then you can really see the kind of the chain of decision making, see how well it works, how well it follows the process that has been laid out in law. And in my case, is when I've done that kind of thing, I'm just absolutely shocked. The issues that I am concerned with myself are one, the Greenbelt, how much is being spent and what the public is getting for that, exactly how much money has gone into it, and whether the policy, the decision-making process for that goes the way it's supposed to go, the way it's written in law to go. And then the other issue I have is about car impoundments and the whole business with hearings and what people are entitled to, what the law requires, and that. And I, in my own case, again, I just found that the city arrogantly disobeys the law, arrogantly refuses hearings. In my case, where I asked for investigations to what used to be the old CPRB,
Citizens Police Review Board.
What happened in my case, actually, and I didn't find this out till almost a year later, is that Chief Belcher took my two formal investigation requests and changed them on his own whim to an inquiry, which is a very informal little process that has no follow-up paperwork, and essentially whitewashed the whole thing in a couple of days, where a formal investigation would have taken 90 days, and the police never even discovered their error.
Interestingly enough, that he did the same thing repeatedly, and as a matter of kind of course, with inquiries and complaints way back in 1995-96, and he was doing so by a directive that he had written himself, or certainly was continuing to follow himself in the police department, that violated both the state law, the city CPRB law, which said that if you file a complaint, it has to be dealt with as a complaint. It can't be downgraded to an inquiry. There's kind of a state law that's supposed to be protecting people who are filing complaints about the police department. And this became a scandal that I think eventually resulted in the resignation of John Malkin, one of the Citizens Police Review Board members, because the Citizens Police Review Board, which was appointed by the city council, was largely, at that time, a toothless animal, kept saying, oh, let's talk about it behind the scenes with Chief Belcher, let's work it out then. And they never did much, and by the time they got around to it, Belcher had gotten the city council to kind of change things around, so his policies ex post facto were rationalized and legalized. This business of being able to dump complaints that you don't like, he did this with a complaint in the Button Street shooting. He simply threw it away, and it became a scandal when the couple that gave the complaint, Doug McGrath and Marilyn Weaver, I guess she's now Marilyn McGrath, came forward with it again and insisted that it be dealt with. This is a man that was shot 5 times by police, several times in the back, in a home invasion situation where they invaded his home, supposedly to protect his wife, who said she didn't need protection from the, you know, from the outside. Anyway, it's an old situation of police abuse that you're up against. I know you went to court recently. How's it going there? I know that you are the individual who has the unique situation where Well, you're the first individual I've heard where police moved in to remove you from the library. Four officers?
Four officers inside, and then I guess a couple of backup.
Well, you got to be careful. You're a pretty dangerous character. You were because you were barred from all city buildings due to the fact that the city manager took a serious disliking to you, and you kind of put your issues in an uncompromising way. You were held in jail for 34 days in a case where they accused you of what?
A whole lot of things that weren't true.
Well, you went to the city manager's office, made a request, and you had a little hatchet with you.
I was carrying my hatchet so that it wouldn't be stolen. I just stuck it in my belt,
which is not a crime, and
didn't think anything about it really to tell the truth.
They never took that to any kind of criminal proceeding, but they used.
Well, they tried to. It got thrown out right away.
I mean, it was never successfully taken to a criminal proceeding, and you were nonetheless held for 34 days, and then they were eventually told you had to take medication to get out of jail, mind-altering, psychotropic medication. I guess you resisted that successfully?
It reminds me of, 1984, when a citizen seems to be bucking the norm, and asking too many questions, it's time to get your mind reprogrammed.
We've all heard of the abuses, but the kind of abuses you suffered, like you then were told, you were the only person, as I was going to say, that I've heard of in the history of Santa Cruz. I wouldn't go that far. I've never heard of anybody else being told that she or he could only ask 5 questions per month to the city manager. These had to be in writing. I mean, you know.
Well,
absurd.
I know, Robert. The point is, they weren't answering any questions,
and they weren't answering them anyway.
And they still didn't after the court order. They still haven't done it. So that's.
I'm glad you're continuing to pursue these issues. And I think other people need. I think your suggestion to the caller that you pick an issue and go after it as rigorously as you can. Give people mainly. I think to get some attention.
Become an expert in one small issue, one small process. You'll find that. As you do your homework on it, you'll learning the law and learning the process and digging out the records, it'll give you plenty to do. Forget trying to expand a larger.
Plus, it's often useful to have a number of people with you. A lot of people go out as loners, and you often find that, it's hard to work with people. People fall out. People disagree. You know, there's always the danger when you work with someone you're going to have trouble with working with them. But it often is. The only way to get some attention, I think that's why the De Anza people, they got the attention and then they got sold out by the people in their midst. It was a sad thing. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi. Could you elucidate, Young, about what court order mandated that they answer questions? What did it say and what did they have to answer?
Okay. Yeah.
Shall I take it off the air? Or do you want to stay on the air, caller?
I don't understand the area.
Just go ahead. I'll hang up.
Okay.
Okay.
What the city tried to do after my arrest, and they tried to get an injunction against me. Dick Wilson, to go back a little bit. Dick Wilson, my
city manager.
Dick Wilson, the city manager, had received from me letters because two of my vehicles were impounded illegally, and. So I wanted the hearings that I was entitled to by law, and the city denied me the hearings. The police department and the city attorney denied me the hearings, and so I wrote a long letter to the city manager and told them, and it demanded some kind of a conference in that. And soon after that, about a week after that, the city manager, and I was in the city hall actually making some research requests through their process, so you have to write down your question. And city manager Dick Wilson comes up and hands me a letter saying I can't communicate with staff directly. I have to write all my questions down and hand them to him. I said, this is, you're like trying to get a restraining order against me without doing it, and this is bullshit. I didn't tell him that face to face. I was a little more polite than that, but the city continued to try. They tried to run me off. Tried to enforce that letter, I knew that I had a legal right to come to the city, and it's what you call petition to redress your grievances. It's part of one of your basic rights under the Constitution, the Bill of Rights. When I was arrested in front of City Hall, and I put up some resistance, quite a bit of resistance, so they tried to throw everything in the book at me. They tried to get this injunction. The case number, if you ever want to look it up, it's all the documents are public record. It's a civil case, CV 145048. You can look at the file. Any person can look at a file and see what's in there, and you can see all the arguments the city made and all the arguments I made. But in any case, what happened, the city tried to get the injunction. We had a hearing, and they made their best effort to quash all my subpoenas, all my witnesses. They wanted every one of them thrown out. They didn't want anybody there that would give a counter to the arguments they were trying to make. And they were fairly successful in that. But what I was trying to do is make sure that this whole issue of the vehicle impoundments got into the hearing. The city didn't want it because it was a hot potato. It involved my civil rights. But the other thing I discovered, the city did some bad legal work. The injunction, the statute they wanted to get me, get this injunction under, they couldn't do it.
Yon, go to the question if you can, okay. Which is what specifically, what did the court, or how did the court order you to order the questions, and what questions were they allowing you to answer? What
okay.
questions did you try to get answered?
Well, I was just getting to that. So what happened is the city was basically losing. They couldn't get their injunction, and so the judge said, well, look, let's just try to mediate a settlement here where Mr. Goldie can get his questions asked and answered, and the city won't get bothered by him constantly. And so we agreed to the stipulation that Judge Attic asked, well, how many questions do you think, asked the city attorney, how many questions should Mr. Golder be able to ask a month? The city attorney said 2, and then I was thinking more like 15, but I said 10, and so the judge said, well, let's make it 5, and so they're supposed to answer 5 of my questions a month. It's a court-ordered, a stipulation is an agreement between the parties. But it has the effect of a court order. The judge puts a stamp of approval on it.
A dumb stipulation, Yon. I told you that at the time.
A what?
A dumb stipulation. You should never have agreed to it.
Well, I just thought I'd try it and see. It was a trial deal. It was supposed to last for 6 months. And essentially, the city didn't abide by it. I got a couple of questions answered, but all the key questions that I asked, the hard questions that had to do with the legal, the kind of legal core of my complaints to the city, about the car impoundments and about the greenbelt issues, were not answered. They just refused to answer them, and so that's what the order was, and it's essentially no longer in effect. I have to take the city back to court. They can't really get the injunction against me legally. I can force them to answer the questions, but if they don't, then all I can do is file an injunction against them. There's a few other legal things.
I think you've answered her question. I think you've answered her question. I mean, you didn't answer the specifics, but the questions had to do with the green belt and had to do with the vehicle policy. I know you've been working on, because other people have had their vehicles taken too, and isn't really a lot of good information about what to do when you get a notice on your vehicle, what kind of rights you have, and I know that you've been struggling to get a flyer out, to get a kind of an informational flyer out on that. It's kind of hard because you cannot call the city council, the city hall directly. You're still barred by the stipulation from doing so. So it's really absurd. I'm going to move on to another subject, though. 427-3772 is the phone number if you want to call in at Free Radio Santa Cruz. I'm going to check the old emails, see if anybody's been emailing in. Nope, nobody's been emailing.
Robert,
so
I wanted to tell people what city police internal affairs said about changing those investigations to inquiries,
downgrading them from complaints to.
This is directly from the words of the present internal affairs officer. I think they got another name for it, something like quality control, police quality control, or something. But this is the fellow who receives these complaints, and he told me what had happened in my case. Kind of had to pry this out of him, but he said Chief Belcher took my complaint, my investigation request, 2 of them actually, and changed it to an inquiry. And I said, well, now how can the chief do that? It doesn't seem right. His answer was, it's Chief Belcher's department and he can do any damn thing he wants to.
Sounds like what Sergeant Clark said when he took away blankets from homeless people on a cold night in front of City Hall, and somebody said, listen, council members Byers and Celia Scott say you don't need to take away blankets. You just need to take pictures of them if you want to, evidence that people are violating the blanket ban by covering up after 11 o'clock at night. Why don't you just take a picture? Why are you taking the blankets? And Sergeant Clark turned with a smile and said, because I can.
Yeah, so what the point of all this is if you dig deep enough on a particular issue and you really work hard to ask the right questions, you're gonna come up with stuff that just shocks the hell out of you about your own government. And I think if 50 citizens from this community just picked their different favorite subjects and went after it and did their homework and pressed the city with questions and pressed them legally to answer those questions, by God, we'd get some responsive government here, or it would become such a pile of hot potatoes that recalls would start happening. So it's certainly citizen involvement on specific issues, doing your homework, finding out exactly what the issues are, and finding out what law the city is supposed to follow. That's real important, because then when they come after you with try to beat you up with the law, then you can actually defend yourself, and you can come back at them and use the law to force them in the position. And that's essentially what happens. The city's litigation is the bottom line. And when you look at the cases that they've been losing, you find out that it's really because of the way they've handled things. It's because of the way they've handled procedure or laws improperly, and the court winds up telling them no. City
couple
can't
of
do it.
Couple of announcements. Indeed, the Saponi case is one was the last piece of great good news last week, where the police abuse was finally became accountable after the city's hired attorney Vince Hurley had spent $500,000 of taxpayer money dealing with a case that could have been settled with an apology and then later with a $10,000 or $20,000 settlement. But a couple of announcements and comments. If you look in today's Sentinel, I'm going to jump around a little bit here. There's a story by Dan White, my favorite writer. The Lone Ranger, tight times leave one man to watch the woods. Now, Yon, you're a man who kind of wanders the Poganip a bit or knows it somewhat. Did you see this article about the...
Well, I haven't seen the article yet, but I actually had a good long talk with Dan White when he was right in the middle of writing it.
Well, he apparently knows that because he includes you in this article. He refers to you as a... I'll tell you what he writes about you. This is an article about the Lone Ranger, the park...
Mr. John Wallace.
Mr. Wallace, who wanders about giving tickets occasionally to campers and enforcing the camping ban on the Poganip and just patrolling the area. There's not a word in here about the significant lack of shelter space and the criminalization of homeless people, except, of course, there's a little anecdotal discussion of it, but there's no indication of how rangers are regarded by homeless people generally as essentially kind of enforcement agents who are obtrusive and abusive individuals who are not there to help, but are there essentially to rob them of sleep, camping equipment, force them to move on, and so forth. The man, in other words. You're mentioned in this article. Among the loudest critics of the Greenbelt policy is Jan Golder, who feels the city has bungled its land management and put Wallace into an impossible position while imposing too restrictive policies on land use. And he doesn't, of course, there's not a word, you probably didn't talk to him about your homeless status, that you live in your vehicle and that you've been, struggling to survive, even as the city has been preying on your vehicles, preying on your rights, jailing you. So, I mean, have you ever talked to White about those issues?
No, a little bit. Actually, he knows about the car impoundment thing, and he's got some information.
He knows about it, but he hasn't written a word about it. Instead, it's a little puff piece on the Lone Ranger. This is the time when people are being driven away from their places to live. In Watsonville, they're clearing out homeless chapels and bulldozing them. On the west side, they're forcing people to move away. They're destroying campgrounds up near Pioneer House. And we're getting the Lone Ranger on the front page of the Sentinel. I'm not terribly happy with this. And then we look on the local news, and above the fold we find Mayor Riley recognized for supporting animal rights. Uh-huh. And it's actress Mary Tyler Moore sending Mayor Riley a letter for her October 14th proclamation stating that animals exploited by agribusiness are sentient beings capable of awareness, feeling, and suffering. Now, I guess the problem is, are poor humans sentient beings? Do humans have the right to sleep at night, Mayor Riley? Do they have the right to park and shelter themselves from the rain without being harassed by the police? Do they, at least pigs and veal and chickens, pigs and I guess it's deer from which veal come, being raised in captivity have some kind of shelter. I mean, of course, they're being raised for slaughter. But this idea that I've never heard of her issuing a homeless rights day, for instance, or a human rights day locally. So Riley's concern here kind of makes me gag a little bit. This October 24th being declared Sentient Beings Day. Yeah. Just kind of sounding off here on that particular bit of gorge rising activity, which just, as I said, raises my dander. Let's see. I have lost my internet, so I'm going to have to find it again. Let's hear an interview or two from the streets while we're waiting. We've heard a lot from me and from the folks in the studio. Here's something from the folks outside.
It is November. Dine's Death Day. We're going to be remembering that tomorrow. 2003, we're in, is it the Falafel Hut, the Falafel House, or the Falafel Joint? I'm not sure what.
The House of Falafel.
House, oh, Falafel. Anyway, it's Mike's place. It has recently expanded to actually include a bathroom, not for the public, of course, but for customers. With me, I have the infamous hairdresser and street habitué, Uncle Ray. Hi, Ray.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm good. Now, you ran across us at the Peace Rally. We're going to do a march all over town, but we end up just singing and clapping and freezing, and nobody moves anywhere at the town clock. Actually, it was a pretty big crowd there for a while. And you happened to mention that that there was an incident two or three or four downtown that you've been observing.
Oh, well, there's a couple incidents I'd like to tell you about, Robert. The first incident I saw was, this is about a week and a half ago, and, you know, the kids out in front of Borders, you know, they're up to their old shenanigans again, just sitting around doing nothing, and, you know, there's a lot of people in this community that just can't abide by that. Well, anyway, what I saw was and all of you out there, you might want to take notice, it's the Sheriff's Department, and they're using a late model green Cherokee with tinted glass. And the Cherokee pulled up really quick, and it came up really quick, that's why I noticed it. And two cops, well, I don't know what I want to call them, but, assholes. They jumped out of the car, and they ran into the crowd of kids sitting on the pavement there on the sidewalk, and they tackled this young girl. I mean, these cops, one of them was about your size, and, you know, fairly big guy, and the girl was like 18, and maybe she weighed 100 pounds on a good day. And she was sitting down on the ground, and they completely bowled over her, took her to the ground, and didn't say a word about who they were. Some other kid kind of jumped up and grabbed one of them to kind of fend him off of them. I mean, it seemed like some kind of strange attack. Which
were they in uniform? Or?
No, they were undercover. You know, and as soon as the other kid jumped on one of the cops, then they pulled their badges, and they said, you know, police, and then everybody jumped back. Well, as it turns out, they arrested both the young girl. They arrested her for selling drugs, and they arrested the young guy for assault and battery on a police officer.
What drug?
Well, yeah, that's the thing. I found out, she's a criminal. She was holding little $20 bindles of pot for her boyfriend. Okay, so she's holding pot for her boyfriend. They're selling a little bit of pot to make ends meet on the sidewalk. Big crime, that's, you know, anybody's guess. Anyway, the cops beat her up, took her to the ground, threw her in the car. Next thing you know, there's like 15 police officers all around so they could get the undercover guys out before everybody really notices who they are. I wish I had a camera because I'd love to post those pictures up. But then her boyfriend, right, the one that she's holding the drugs for, he's going like, no, wait, don't take my baby away. And he starts talking to her. She's being arrested. They tell him to shut up. He's all, no, you don't understand. It's my drugs. I'm responsibility. I'm the one you should be arresting. But did they arrest him? No, they didn't arrest him. They took the girl away, and they took the young guy that was trying to defend her from the fascist police. And as far as the other guy, they asked him what his name was, and that's by the time he was thinking, well, and he kind of walked away. Seems like most people just walk away and leave when the cops start coming down really hard, and they've been taking the gloves off downtown Santa Cruz, near as I can tell.
And when did this happen?
This is about a week and a half ago. A week and a half ago, 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Porter says the new ATM solution to sitting. You've noticed that the ATM is going in where Borders is. There's a, yeah. Oh, it's just a change machine? Just a change machine. So that means you won't be able to sit within 50 feet in either direction of that particular structure.
Yeah, that's true. And I don't think you're going to be able to get any change out of that machine either, because a lot of the kids are already talking about caulking it up or doing something, and, you know, and I applaud that activity as well. Oh, and I wanted to tell you another story. This was just the other day, and it was down by the music store where they sell guitars down the way on Pacific. I forget what the name of it is.
Union Grove?
Yeah, that's it. Well, anyway, you know, out there, their parking lot, there is a planter section. The cops call it a planter section. It seemed kind of strange to me, but it's kind of a curved-off area where there are some plants. And as everybody in Santa Cruz knows, there's lots of homeless people that sit down there and panhandle and what have you. Anyway, the other day, there was some punk rocker, Call 'em Anarchist kids, hanging out there. There's about six of them, half a dozen of them, and they're a little aggressive. They wanted to get some money for some beer, and they were like kind of like hooting and hollering and just being stupid, you know. I mean, they weren't hurting anybody, but they were being stupid. And it was a nice hot day in Santa Cruz, and, you know, next thing you know, a couple of them take off their shirts, right? A couple guys take off their shirts, and then this female with them, she takes off her shirts too, or her shirt too, and, you know, she looked pretty good there and everything. And I was like watching this go down, because, you know, nothing
good
would come of that. Oh, yeah. What can I say? I'm a hairdresser. Anyway, so I'm watching all the people walk by, and of course the Santa Cruz people are like, they could care less, but the tourists are like, you know, oh my God, did you see the tits on that girl? And then of course, you know, you have your downtown crew of cops and that whole level of security personnel, and they go by, and they're like, you know, talking on the phone, you know, we got a girl burying her breast down here, got a girl burying her breast down here. And then I noticed some other cop, the young Chicano cop with the short hair, real attitude problem, he's kind of new on the scene over the last couple months. Anyway, he was, he had this other Mexican gentleman in handcuffs, and he was obviously taking him to the bus station to put him on a bus. And I was kind of watching to see what the story with that goes, because, you know, he pulled out a whole bunch of money and then he gave it back to him, you know, who knows, but at least he let the guy go. Anyway, they're all like hanging out at the bus stop, and I'm kind of over there, kind of over listening to their conversation as I usually do from time to time, and they're going, well, you see the kids over there, let's get them, let's bust that girl over there. I don't know who she thinks she is, but we're going to bust her this time good. So I mean,
said that.
The tall blue shirt guy, not the real cop, but
the light blue shirt. Are you talking about Officer Pollock, perhaps?
Yeah, Pollock. Anyway, so Pollock, you know, he's got heat on for this girl, because of course she's not wearing any shirt and everything, and well, they say they're going to go bust them, so of course, you know, I get out there first, and I walk by and I go, hey, man, the cops are coming to bust you. If I were you, I'd just put your clothes on and leave, because it's not going to be pretty. And she's all like, I don't care, and I'm all, well, okay, so I'll sit down on the bench and watch this one go down. So they came over, and okay, so you have three people not wearing shirts. You have six people all sitting on the same curb. You have two people who are being a little bit obnoxious, okay? But the cops come after the female without a shirt. They don't even say anything to anybody else. They come right after her. They start asking her for her ID. They start harassing her. They
How
get
many
her.
Police officers?
Three, and then two more showed up, so five.
What time of day?
This was about 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Do you remember the day?
The day, well, that'd be 2 days ago, so.
The day is Tuesday, so that would be Sunday?
No, actually Monday. Monday.
Yesterday.
Yesterday. Excuse me. So they come over and they bust her. Of course, they run her for warrants, and apparently she has another warrant because she was sitting on another, you know, I think they said she was sitting on some planter structure, you know, a while ago. So that poor
criminal sitting.
Criminal sitting. She's an habitual offender, so now they're going to cuff her, and they cuff her. They don't clothe her, but they cuff her, and they put her in the car, and then they all start kind of laughing at her and jeering at her. Meanwhile, her friends, afraid of getting arrested, they take off. And the thing is, they charged her with sitting on a planter, because, of course, you know, they don't want to say anything about nudity or anything like that, because then women's groups will get all upset.
Did she give her name?
She gave her name, but I didn't really catch her name. So, you know, again, you know, the cops doing their thing downtown, and then even today, you know, I saw two girls with dogs. One was a pug, the other was a chihuahua, and of course they're shopping, you know, they're great consumers, so that's fine with them, but, you know, some punk rocker kid with a pit bull, young pit bull who wasn't hurting anybody, he gets the ticket. You know, meanwhile, crime goes on, you know, I'm walking around, I see prostitution, I see drug dealing, I see bike theft happening every day, and the cops don't do anything about it. All they want to do is bust homeless people and, you know, kids who got no place to sleep at night, you know, trying to just hang out. And it just seems to me, you know, from my eyes, I work downtown every day. Every day I'm on that street walking back and forth at least once or twice. And it just gets worse and worse. And pretty much all the new people coming in, you know, they know. I mean, you mess with the Santa Cruz cops and you're going to get a ticket at the very least. And the next time you mess with them, you're going to jail. For what? For sitting against something? For sitting too close to something? You know how it is, Robert. So it seems to me like it's getting worse. The gloves will come off, and they're doing everything that they can to bring in revenue. I guess they got the word because of
the budget crunch,
and of course they lost the Blue Lagoon thing, so, you know, I think they're...
Blue Lagoon, yes. The one bright spot in a dim universe.
Yeah, and hopefully it'll be even better now that they got the word out about that place, you know? People will start coming back.
Thanks, Ray.
Yeah, thank you. Always nice to see you.
All right. So we have Sergeant Baker and Officer... Sergeant Baker seems to be giving a ticket with Officer Phelps here. Looks like another ticket downtown. What's the ticket for?
What?
What's the ticket for?
What ticket?
Huh?
What ticket?
He's getting a ticket.
He's getting a ticket for, I think, after dark.
Was he harassing people or bothering people in any way? As far as
you don't have to be.
I know, but was he?
I don't know.
You didn't hear, you didn't see him?
Ask somebody for a quarter.
For ticket for asking for a quarter downtown. Two police officers. Your taxpayer dollars at work. Check it out, folks. Sergeant Baker giving a ticket for asking for a quarter downtown on Pacific Avenue. Asking for a quarter after dark in Santa Cruz is a crime. Sergeant Baker is on the job. Check it out. We don't harass poor people in Santa Cruz. Sergeant Baker is just enforcing the law, right? A sergeant of the Santa Cruz Police Department is spending your money giving a ticket to a poor man for asking for 25 cents downtown. He's double parked his squad car up here with the lights on, spending your money so he can come here and harass poor people. He's taking away in handcuffs now. What's the charge? Now he's being taken in handcuffs away because he does not have ID. What's your name? Do you want to give a name?
Green one.
Give a name?
Johnny Lundstrom.
How do you spell it? Johnny Lundstrom.
I talked to Lundstrom the next day. He wasn't being charged with not having an ID. He was being charged with drunk in public. But my perception, as well as that of others around me, as well as his statement later, was that he'd had one beer. He asked to be given an alcohol test. He was not given any kind of a test. He was released 5 hours later with a panhandling ticket. On the issue of ID, we actually had some discussions with Ray Glock Grunike, who was formerly a lawyer and is now a legal worker and quite a shrewd legal mind, as far as I'm concerned. He's running for, trying to run for the, he's running for the Green Party congressional representative to challenge Representative Farr in this district. He has to be elected in the primary, but he's running to be the candidate in the primary. He came to a Huff meeting and talked about the issue of ID, and we had some interesting discussions about that. But let's get back to this thing on the streets. We can talk more about these other issues, which I think are also relevant and very interesting. And in fact, later in the day, if we have time, it looks like we won't because the show only has another 20 minutes to go. Ray Glock Grunike phoned in a long discussion of his position on the move-along law. He wasn't able to come into the studio or to call in, but he did give this long discussion on the telephone, which I'm hoping we can play. Let's hear some more, though, of arrested for 25 cents and supposedly drunk in public in front of Borders.
Justice in Santa Cruz, keep your eyes on these local police officers leading this man away in handcuffs. Sergeant Baker has no rapes, no murders, no thefts to deal with. He wants to take a man to jail for asking for 25 cents after dark. That's what these police officers are doing. Check it out here. It's all being done very quietly as you have dinner, as you walk by. Sounds like the gentleman is accusing Sergeant Baker of some sort of sexual inappropriately touching a prisoner. That's what it sounds like. Charges! Panhandling after dark, asking for a quarter. Sergeant Baker is taking this man in handcuffs to jail right now. Check it out. So the man admits he's asking for a quarter for a beer. He's being searched now by Sergeant Baker. He seems to feel it's an appropriate use of taxpayer money to take a man to jail for asking for a quarter after dark. And we have another officer colluding with him, leaning on the door of the squad car. That's Officer Phelps is doing that.
Were you leaning on the car door?
Two police officers using your money to harass poor people downtown while you watch, check it out, and having a good time as they do. Sergeant Baker seems to be enjoying himself, aren't you, Sergeant Baker? I think he is. A squad car blocking traffic here so that Sergeant Baker can show his stuff here downtown. Taking a poor man to jail for asking for a quarter after dark. This is the new Santa Cruz, folks. This is your police department at work. It's not a constitutional violation. It's Sergeant Baker and Officer Phelps doing their job, right, folks? Let's have a hand for these officers. Keep up the good work, Sergeant. We're talking to a witness. What's your name?
I am Alicia.
And Alicia, have you been hassled by police lately?
Just 5 seconds ago.
And what happened?
Well, when I first got to Santa Cruz last year, the first thing I saw was a guy talking to a cop, and he was saw a black guy and said a racial slur, and the cop just laughed at him. And couldn't do anything because it was freedom of speech. Well, this guy says out loud, which is speech, do you have 20 quarters so I can get a beer? That's freedom of speech. The cop comes out of nowhere and decides to take him away somewhere.
Here in front of Borders about 20 minutes ago?
Ten minutes ago. Yeah.
I saw him.
Still see the cop car.
Yeah, he's Sergeant Baker's and Officer Phelps' car is right up there. They're taking him off in handcuffs. Was the man being abusive or violent or?
No, he was sitting, playing the guitar, just standing there.
Hey, that's a constant.
And he said something, and I was like, wow, that was pretty clever. He tried it again, and there was a cop there. That was so dumb. I don't know how they could take you to jail for asking a question. No, he is not drunk. He is sober. He's a totally normal person, and he asked a simple question. No.
They arrested them for panhandling after dark.
How could you arrest somebody for asking a stupid question? What's the difference between saying, do you have a quarter and do you have any underwear? Seriously, it's just words. And you just ask a simple question.
What's your name?
My name is Heidi.
So what do you think, Heidi?
I think it's bullshit. I think all us hippies should be able to hang out and say and do whatever the fuck we want, as long as we live and survive. They aren't helping us. They just keep taking us to jail. They aren't feeding us. We're feeding each other. Taking us to jail for it is wrong.
Anybody else see this who wants to make a comment or any thoughts anybody has?
One thing that basically...
What's your name?
My name's Lean. Basically, asking anything to another person is your right and your constitutional right of free speech. It's about free speech, and it's about non-aggressively asking your brother, your sister, whatever you want to ask them, directions, time, quarter, whatever. I mean that's it's just a big scam to oppress the poor. Like you were saying, that's what it is. Everybody knows it. Everybody knows it. I don't know why it keeps going on.
Have you seen anything happening in the last couple of days, or is this the one incident you've seen?
I don't hang out down here that much for that reason. For that very reason, I don't hang out down here that much, because I've been a victim of harassment myself many times.
By police or by private individuals?
By police. In different cities, too, not just here. Some places are worse than here. But, yeah, I've been a victim of harassment several times.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the update.
You're welcome. Thank you.
All right. And it's about 7:30. This happened about 7:15. Borders. You've been listening to some conversations on the subject of the latest arrest by Sergeant Baker and Officer Phelps. No citation because no ID. That seemed to be what he was saying. Bogus arrest.
Can you say that again?
Quit saying that. When your cop says, "Do you have any ID?" I say, "I have a great ID. Get the fuck out of my face."
And there you have it. Brave words to a man, an unarmed man, to a man with a gun. You got to be careful of that.
I was already one of the problems like 20 years ago when I beat up 12 cops. That's designated here in the records in town.
Okay, to put this out on the radio?
Yeah, go ahead. I don't care. So I was here 21 years ago in Santa Cruz. I got in trouble. I was really like on a very sober day. I was working down here at the boardwalk. I came from my job, came down here towards the avenue, got down about where Laura was, and had a confrontation with a police officer. He said I was jaywalking, and I just kind of like laughed at him because I didn't really care. It was only the simplest thing to cross the street and not get hit by a car, but he bitched at me, and so I was having a bad day, tried to wrestle me down. I knocked him out. Next cop came at me, and I knocked him out. Two more cars came around the corner, officers came towards me, and I ended up taking on 12 police officers and
pulled their guns. Tall tales from the street, folks. Oh, who knows? I can't vouch for their validity or not. You're tuned to Free Radio 96.3 FM, the last 12 minutes of Bathrobs Pier's Broadsides show. Here's your chance to call in, 427-3772, do if you'd like, and we'll listen to another quick interview and then do some quick announcements and then be on our way.